And this episode is brought to you in partnership with E27 and Echelon X. Now, if you find tech and startups interesting, you might want to check out Echelon X, which is a two-day event happening in Singapore that is focused on all things startup and tech in Southeast Asia. It's going to be on the 15th and 16th of May 2024 at the Singapore Expo, and there's going to be like 10,000 people, 200 plus companies and startups, including us, because we're going to have a booth for Folklery. So there'll be talks with some really cool speakers, there'll be panels, there'll be fireside chats, and just a lot of companies showcasing the awesome stuff they're working on, as well as discussions about trends that we are all aware of, you know, like AI and stuff like that. And the good news is, you can actually get a free pass. All you need to do is use the promo code Folklery at the link in the show notes and you'll get a free ticket to attend. So check it out, and at the very least, you can come say hi to us. All the details on the conference are in the show notes, along with the full lineup of speakers, the agenda, and hope to see you guys there. And now, on to the podcast. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Yala, your thrice weekly podcast where we talk about the hottest news with a touch of what, Terrence?
Good old humor.
Good old humor, man. Dang, welcome it back, Terrence.
Feels good to be back, man.
Feels good, man. Yeah.
I know, like, since I've been away, there's a lot of anger. Somehow, when with you at the steering wheel alone, there's a lot of anger on this podcast. What happened? What
fucking
happened?
People calling us spineless, you know. Like, what are you saying? Like, hating on the guests.
Yeah.
I think it's what just... happened?
You just let... You just,
I let loose. I took my hand off the wheel. Tristan also was abroad. It was just me holding the fort and like... Yeah, it's all me, Terrence.
In the immortal words of Lo Tia Kiang, you need a driver.
Spanking, is it?
A co-driver, is it? Or is it passenger? To smack you in the face when the driver goes off.
Co-passenger.
Someone in the front seat. Someone in the front seat. To slap you in the face when you
go off track. Because, yeah, it's all my fault, Terrence. It's all my fault. Just so happened, while both of you are away, I'm like, oh my God, what is happening?
And then you just kept quiet. You didn't respond to any anything or so, right? As in comments, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I think we can talk about it. Because, I mean, since you were gone, I mean, Ish, we had the podcast with Minister Desmond Lee, podcast with Terrence Lee, podcast with Sharul.
So
some interesting feedback. Interesting feedback across all.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, what else has been up in Singapore, man? Admittedly, because I have been off the grid for... almost 2 weeks, right?
Mm.
And not even by choice, because my phone actually died while I was in Korea. So I was really cut off from like the wired world, right? Mm. We'll talk about the acronym later. Mm. Yeah, I was really cut off from that world. So I didn't even know of certain big things happening like the Taiwan earthquake until like days after.
Mm.
Yeah, but what has been happening in Singapore has been occupying your mind.
Bruno Mars came.
Oh, yes, Bruno Mars, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And you went to the concert.
I got a chance to go. Shout out to KASM, who gave us a pair of tickets.
Did you get spat on by anybody?
No, I didn't get spat on. Yeah. And I mean, I went to his last concert the last time he came, and I did not like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I can't say I'm the biggest fan of Bruno Mars. Mm. The last time he came, it felt like he was just performing, just going through the motions, and it was damn short.
Mm.
But this one was good, man.
Was it better than the Coldplay concert?
I think because I was seated the whole time and I didn't spend the first half trying to get close to the front and being like blocked by tall people, I actually enjoyed it more.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He's a good... I mean, this time he went 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, he was interacting with the crowd, flirting with the crowd. Even though after that, I know at Maki, he got some shit for just showing up for 10 minutes.
He did exactly what you said he did the last concert at Maki.
Yeah.
He saved it for Maki.
That's why I was telling my friend who also listens to this podcast, he knows I went to the Bruno Mars concert the last time with him. I was like, you know, I think Bruno Mars is a changed man. Then I see that Maki article, then I was like, oh shit, is it true? But I didn't realize how many iconic songs he has sang or co-written.
Yeah.
Because he started playing just some old songs and I'm like, oh shit, this guy has created a number of hits over the years.
That was me at Ed Sheeran also. Where I went in blind.
Yeah.
I didn't like do my Spotify playlist refresh or anything. And then I realized, oh shit, yeah, there's so many songs that, you know, not say I grew up with, but like in the last decade or plus, you know, you've heard these songs all along, but you might not even register that it's sung by him, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, I mean, like, to the staff of the stadium also, like, it really looks like they do this, like, like a clockwork. To their credit, I mean, there's no, you know, like whenever there's like a first time for something, people are a bit shaky. Well, this one, you come out of the MRT, got someone on a microphone, kind of like urging you to go to which, based on what gates you have, go up which exit at Stadium MRT.
Yeah.
Then you go up, then you're greeted by people with like fucking like lights, like air traffic controllers, asking you to go here, go there. And like, wow, it's like, and you see it, you're like, oh shit, this is a great capability to be building, like, the ability to hold concerts like this.
Yeah.
And events.
And Singapore is easy. It's easy around. Because I say this because, yeah, being in Korea for 2 weeks and all, I mean, I enjoyed it a lot, had fun and all. But yeah, sometimes getting around as a tourist, you know, needing to get from one like attraction to another was tough, man. I felt like, wow, and not having my phone as well.
Yeah.
I felt lost, man. I felt like I was just lost in the grid.
No Google Maps.
I was using paper maps.
But you didn't ask your wife's phone.
Obviously. I did. But at the same time, at certain points, we need to, you know, divide and conquer or do different run errands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then I was really relying on the old school, like, pen and paper to get around.
But it make you appreciate, you know, the archaic old times.
I think some level of disconnecting every once in a while is good, but not at the level that I went, where I was really cut off from the world.
For a few days.
And like not knowing whether your friends or family are doing okay when some disaster strikes and all that. You know, that's kind of like, oh shit, what did I miss out on? That kind of feel.
The good level of disconnect is like going to parliament. 2 hours.
2 hours, detox. Or I think was it Andy Chen himself who said that he has like, you know, he separates his like life phone and a work phone. And the life phone doesn't have all the, you know, social media and all that nonsense that you need to do for work on it. And then the work phone has all the social media and all that nasty stuff. But he doesn't allow that phone to enter his bedroom or something like that. He has some arrangement like that, right?
I see.
Yeah, so he doesn't see anything until, like, you know, later in the morning or what. I thought that's probably the best arrangement you can do for yourself.
You draw lines.
Because it's impossible to not use your phone or not have social media. Because, yeah, all the apps and booking stuff and QR codes at restaurants and stuff like that, you need your phone, you know?
Yeah. Do you impose any kind of thing like that? Kind of like boundaries?
I didn't, I didn't. But now, actually, after this experience, I'm like much more like, oh, okay, you need your phone, but should you be on your phone all the time? That's the question. Yeah.
One thing I tried like a few weeks ago at home, when I go to the bathroom, I don't bring my phone in anymore.
Yeah, there's a common, a lot of men have that.
It actually makes a huge difference. Fucking huge difference. You go there and you're like sitting, you're like, okay lah.
I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm like, oh shit, this actually is a lot faster than it used to be.
Correct.
So I'm like, how it's going.
Yeah.
It's good lah.
But I mean, in some ways, men do it because
to get away.
I mean, and not anything about your wife. I'm just saying, like, even if you have like kids and all these kind of things, sometimes in the toilet is that one time that, you know, someone's not like calling for attention and all that. So is it necessarily a bad thing that someone has like his alone time, you know, in the toilet, catch up with life?
I don't know, because then like I would be on social media, you know. Social media right now is like I try to treat it as work also. In that bathroom, it's like this special space that just, I don't know, things happen.
Pornhub.
No. More social media. Social media, like, is anything that, like, yeah, you just, I don't know, it just became like this thing that you go in and you become a different person and shit like that.
I felt the other bit of pressure that was removed was the need to document every, like, nice moment. Because I was traveling, right? So the only digital device that helped me was, like, a camera, right? And the camera was like, okay, you know, I'll take photos when something comes up.
Yeah.
But when I had my phone, it was much more like almost everything I wanted. Selfie you want to take. But without your phone, you're like, oh, okay, is there anything, nice composition here or anything? Nice scenery? No, don't have. Okay, move on. It removed that constant need to make sure I capture this thing so that I can post on social media later. And it was nice.
Then every night when you check, you're like, look at that Reddit comments, you're like, what the fuck is Harish doing? What the hell is he doing?
I go on, I open my laptop. Back to the 2000s, the old school way. The 2000s way. Open my laptop, see, this flood of messages on WhatsApp. Then, this Reddit area is so angry. And I can't do anything because I forgot my login for Reddit and all these things.
So, if you're listening and you haven't seen the comments on Reddit for our previous episodes, there's some healthy discussions.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of opinions being shared.
How has it felt weathering this storm in this past couple of weeks? Even though you got to go and watch Bruno Mars in between and all.
I wouldn't say it's a storm. I think generally
nobody ran up to you at coffee shop and slapped you.
No one poured coffee or anything. Okay. In fact, a lot of some older folk who is a demographic I never knew listens to our podcast come and say, "Hey, good podcast."
And they say good.
They should give me a thumb. Good podcast.
That's how you differentiate someone's age, the way they say good.
Yeah, good.
It's good. It's good podcast. It's
good podcast. Okay. Then apart from that, just trying to also, as much as people don't think that we, they might think that, we don't care about comments. No, we care, and we always are trying to get better at what we do. Just been thinking a lot.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it's a storm. Yeah. I haven't been cancelled yet.
Yeah. All back to regular
programming. I'm still gonna have some interesting guests coming up.
Mm.
I don't know what the comments will be like for that, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Cool.
But cool, man.
But before jumping into the two topics of today, which is it's been a while, right? What do we have to tell people?
That if you enjoy this podcast, have been listening to it for a while, maybe even listen to us for the first time and enjoy it, it'd be great if you could share it with at least one person. You can follow us on TikTok, Instagram to see little excerpts, and subscribe on Spotify and Apple. Leave us a review because it really helps people find the podcast.
Yeah. But when you tell that one person, you must say, good, it's a good podcast to listen to.
Good podcast with a thumbs up. Good podcast.
And then if you want to explore more, working with us or finding out what other things, interesting things we do. There's a beautiful website, ministryoffunny.com. Mm. Ministryoffunny.com. Yeah, just to make that clear.
Hell yeah.
And it has everything there. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Cool. All right. Shall we jump into the first topic?
Yeah. And quite apt is about the divide between the digital world and real people, right?
Yeah.
So what is this first topic?
So it was a article published by Straits Times that was on 9th April, just earlier this week. It was titled "Singaporean Writers Object to IMDA Using Their Works to Train a Large Language Model."
Mm.
So essentially, this builds on what was discussed last December that Singapore. And IMDA in particular is working on building this national multimodal LLM program, NMLP, to come up with something like ChatGPT, but more focused on Southeast Asian language and culture.
Yeah.
And it was a big announcement last year. It was part of the Singapore's AI strategy 2.0 that was delivered by Lawrence Wong. There was announcements that they're going to invest 70 million Singapore dollars into the development of AI.
Yep.
And they signed, I think, agreements even with some Indonesian agencies to build this language model. So essentially, it is ChatGPT, Llama from Meta, Gemini from Google. They're all based on language LLM programs.
Mm.
It seems to be quite Western-centric. Singapore, I think, took the lead in South Asia to say, you know what? We need to build a base model that understands our culture, our language better. So, as part of that, IMDA sent out a survey on 28 March through Singlit Station, which is a non-profit organization in Singapore, that focuses on the literary scene in Singapore. Engaging writers, organizing a lot of events.
So started by a friend of ours.
And the survey was sent out on 28 March to gather the responses of writers about using their works to train the NMLP.
Mm.
And the deadline, 7th April, extended to 15th April. We got a copy of the survey, which we will talk through.
Yeah.
But that's where we are at.
Yeah. But can we, because there's a lot of technical things being thrown around.
Yeah.
Maybe you just talk through generally what building an LLM with a Southeast Asian database kind of entails, right?
Mm.
So right now, unless you've been living under a rock, it's like ChatGPT. Is this thing that you sort of you type a prompt into it, like, right? You ask a question like, tell me, give me a 2-paragraph summary of the history of Singapore.
Mm.
And then it will, you know, it will trawl through databases, right? Databases of content. So it's a specific database that, excuse me, a specific database that the AI is trained on, right? Mm. It will trawl through what it knows. And then after, it will generate text based on probabilities, right? And then after analyzing this, all these data sets, it will generate a text that will give you, cough out this 2-paragraph summary of the history of Singapore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, broadly speaking, why has it been such a game changer for people?
I think it has just improved the access to information. And like even the first level comprehension of information. Because you can literally put in your meeting notes and say, summarize the top 4 action points from this.
Yeah.
And it can change. It's literally like someone you're talking to who can do this menial work that you don't have to do.
Yeah, no, it's not even menial that much, right? In some sense,
that's true.
It helps you, like, you can even ask it to draft your first draft of an email that you want to write.
Yeah.
Like, I want to write an angry email to complain about something to my MP. Yeah. You can actually ask ChatGPT to do it.
Yeah, with some prompts and like, just minimal prompts, sometimes, right?
And the result actually is like quite close to probably what the final, a good final is.
Yeah.
But what have been the criticisms of that have come up since? Like, is it perfect? That's my question.
I think definitely not perfect, but I think it has exceeded expectations of most people who have used it. Yeah. I've been blown away.
Yeah.
I think you've been blown away also.
Yeah.
I know, like, when it came recently, there was some controversy with the Google's Bard, which has now been renamed Gemini, I think, where they kind of like minority washed a lot of historical figures, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or they manipulated the data set such that, the AI apparently the AI is like being told like, oh, if you want to represent a group of men in history, they need to be multicultural. So very strange things came up, like black Nazi soldiers, for example. You know, if you know the history of the Nazism, it's not a possibility. Like, that doesn't exist. Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then I think, for Southeast Asian, like I think even for us, when we look at captioning Singlish and all, sometimes it's easy to miss words.
Yeah.
One example that was given by IMD in the survey itself was like, you know, if you ask ChatGPT where is the Beach Road Prawn Laksa restaurant, it might tell you that it is in Beach Road when actually there's another branch that is elsewhere. So not going as deep as it can be. I think that it's still seen to be more Western centric, given that most of the data points are from the West.
And that kind of points to one of the you know, criticisms of this ChatGPT and all that, right? Is that you're not 100% sure how accurate the information you're being fed is.
Like
the example you said, where, oh, tell me where Beach Road Prawn Mee is. Then they'll tell you, oh, this is where Beach Road is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't know that Beach Road Prawn Mee is actually not at Beach Road Prawn Mee, right?
Yeah.
And ChatGPT that doesn't really tell you like how accurate whether this is correct at all, right? You probably still have to do your own cross-referencing and fact-checking on Google or some other more less AI-driven database to find out if it's real. And that's where the problems can arise, where people think that whatever that ChatGPT is giving them is the truth, is fact, but actually it's not. And I think the example of this Beach Road Prawn Mee thing is a very innocuous example. It's an example that you get worried about if you're a foodie. You
cannot find your prawn meal.
But it can be more, it can be bigger things that could affect how our society thinks about things. Like, for example, if you ask ChatGPT, what is the legacy of Mr. Lee Kuan Yew? Right? A very different answer when you ask a Westerner, you know, someone based in the West. A very different answer when you ask that question to someone based in Singapore, right? The legacy of Mr. Lee Kuan Yew. Much more, you probably get a much more nuanced answer from someone in Singapore. But because the data set in Singapore is smaller, right?
Yeah.
The ChatGPT probably will be more biased towards the Western answer to it, right? So that's where, this is an interesting attempt by IMDA to you know, let's create a data set that is, I think they call it what, Sea Lion.
Yeah,
I think,
Sea Lion.
Yeah. Well, Southeast Asia language in our...
Languages in one network.
In one network, yeah. Sea Lion, yeah. Quite... quite a cute acronym. But
yeah,
it's an attempt to sort of correct that bias a little bit, like, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a noble attempt, but it has now waded into some waters that even ChatGPT has been called out for, like, which is all these models are great. You see, sometimes you can ask it, even, you know, going to Taiwan, plan your itinerary and all, right? But it's about how these models are being trained.
Yeah.
And we have seen instances where, especially for DALL-E, for example, DALL-E 2, which is OpenAI's image generation thing, you can literally say, rework this image in the style of Picasso or something.
Yeah.
Because they have studied and understood Picasso's works.
Yeah.
So the same thing for literary stuff. And I think last September was when authors in the US like George R.R. Martin and all came together to sue OpenAI for using their works for training. And now IMDA is kind of running into that issue in Singapore.
But isn't that, just put it on the layperson hat about it. Your book is out there.
Yeah.
It's public knowledge. This is like fair use, right? It's the collective knowledge of humanity. Why is it that your knowledge cannot be used to train an AI that can be beneficial to humanity?
Yeah. I mean, I think, there is the nobility of, you know, everyone plays their part. But I think at the core of it, right, like, yes, this ethics issue of, like, intellectual property, which is not the most clearly defined.
Mm.
But the thing is, like a lot of other tech out there, you are using the works of people for free, even though under the guise of research. But at the same time, there is going to be some commercial element to this. This is, Sea Lion is not a non-profit started by Singapore.
Mm.
It has $70 million in investment. So why is it so easy that you want to use this for free on the guise of research?
Mm. Mm.
And that's where I think, like, for me personally, that's one thing that stands out.
Because it costs money to pay the researchers, right?
Yeah, then they're researching what? You want to do research on mice also, you don't just go and, like, get free mice, right?
Catch.
Free. You work in a lab with mice,
yes,
right?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
you have to pay for the mice, right?
Not just pay, you have to, like, feed them every day. You have to check their weight, make sure
they're
healthy.
Before you pull their head and tail to...
No, I don't do that. It's quite sad what they do to the lab mice, which is a whole separate discussion.
Yeah.
But the fact is, when they are under your care, when you are actually taking care of them for the purposes of your experiment and all that, there are also ethics to it. Right?
Yeah.
You also have to follow certain guidelines and you can't just, like, do whatever you want to them also. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think, so there's been a bunch of articles, like, if you look at Straits Times, I mean, what they covered was, like, okay, their writers have issue.
Mm.
They spoke to some writers, and publishers, like Ng Kage from Ethos Publishing.
Yeah.
Then there is a Boston-based Singaporean author, Ellie Chua.
Mm.
Then there is the New York City-based transnational literary organization, Singapore Unbound, which basically is a non-profit that talks about, like, that champions the cause of the writer.
Mm.
And they all have issues.
Yeah.
So IMDA's defense or a spokesperson was that they are soliciting feedback, which is the point of the survey. So it becomes a thing, like, okay, they are getting feedback, but when you saw this, like, I guess because we are in the field of media and content creation, we might have a more of an emotional response.
Correct.
But like, for you, do you have an emotional response, or you believe in the noble goal?
I actually stand on the side that authors and creative, but people who create stuff should be compensated for helping to train these AI models. Because, like, I think in the US, there was Adam Conover was a very big big spokesperson for the Hollywood writers when they were striking and all that, right?
Mm.
That where all these issues came up, right? About AI being able to just cough out scripts in the style of another creative person and things like that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, then the person who actually created the original voice, you know, the vision, the Quentin Tarantinos or the big directors or whatever, they don't get any compensation or credit, right?
Mm.
For creating the original style, right?
Mm.
And now it's bled on into music, into you know, video Sora, right? The Sora, yeah. The video creation as well, and all that, things like that.
Yeah.
It's just, I think Adam Conover, I'm stating because he says that, yeah, don't, I think he feels that generative is a misnomer, right? Generative AI is a misnomer for what it's actually doing. He says it really should be called imitative AI.
Mm.
If anything, it's just imitating what humans have done before. So it's not generating new stuff. And I think he says there's a distinction is important because, yeah, people start saying, oh, but a machine generate idea, that's the machine's idea, right? It's not humans. But it's not. It's saying that what it is just imitating a human, copying a human, right? And so the human should be compensated for that. So I'm generally of that camp that, again, it feels like the early days of social media where they tell you this tech is good for you, it's going to change the world, it's going to create the Arab Spring, it's going to allow people to communicate. But at the same time, they're pirating your content, like how our videos were pirated early on Facebook. And they're saying, oh, we can't do anything about it because this is just how technology is. We're like, oh, we'll catch up at some point, we'll catch up at some point. Meanwhile, Facebook's making, you know, going public, making lots of money off the backs of a lot of unpaid content creators.
But then, you know, like as a writer, director yourself, you know, haven't you referenced writing or directing from the greats?
Yes,
and
of
that
course.
Has gone into the AI of your head.
Yes, of
and
course.
You have churned out stuff
yes.
and made money off it.
Okay.
So yeah. Why is that different?
It's different because I can be sued for it. Someone can bring me to court and say you copied my work and I can be sued for it properly. Can you sue like I don't know, just some random creation of open AI out there? You know, it's very hard, which are some authors are trying to do now. We're not saying that we don't want to have AI at all, you know, doing its work, right? But we're saying that people should be compensated for it. And what the open AI now, I mean, the general argument is that this is fair use, right? It's public knowledge, all that. But if it really comes too close to what your IP or your copyrighted work is, if it's another human who copy you, you can sue the human and then you can fight it out in court and all that. But now you can't do that with OpenAI and it's just moving so fast and there's nobody's like thinking about, okay, how do we make sure that people are fairly compensated first.
And I think that is a good point, the fact that you can be sued because, and also you are not some big-ass company that has billions in funding because how OpenAI has reacted to the class action lawsuit is they have countersued the Times. For apparently hacking into the system, because I think Times also sued them for and claimed that their articles have been used to train the language model. So how OpenAI reacted was they countersued saying that for you to even get that info means you would have hacked into our system or something along those lines. Like they're funded by Microsoft, they have billions of dollars at their disposal. They are making a shit ton of money already. So it just feels like this is another case of tech companies going too far. Because there was another example of I think it was published last November. Apparently, two authors' works were found, more than two Singaporean authors' works were found as part of the Book 3 database. So the Book 3 database, it is a data set that has 183,000 titles. And same thing that were kind of used for research and all these books were made into shadow libraries. There's a name for it, shadow libraries, and under the guise of research and shit like that. So, but why this feels even more worse is because there's one thing about OpenAI or Microsoft has a listed company. It's a tech company and it's not the government. So that's why when IMDA sent out the survey, and I mean, we'll put a link in the survey also because I don't think the survey was sent out to everyone.
Yeah, and you can't click on it in the Straits Times article.
Yeah, you can't click on it. But I mean, we have a link and I don't think we're doing anything wrong by sharing the link because it's worth looking at it. Like, it's not a long survey. They talk about the background, about the creating the sea lion, the rationale, and just briefly is the existing LLMs have a strong bias because there's a lack of data. They gave the Pronomy example. And that they state, IMDA would like to survey writers, publishers, and members of Singapore's literary scene to ask them about their thoughts on developing such an LLM that is trained on local and regional sources. And then they talk about the benefits. And then they say the data handling will only be used for research and all data will be deleted after the research, after the products have been done. So then the questions, what is your name? Do you think there is value in developing Gen AI projects trained on local and regional data? Yes, no, not sure. Kindly explain the reasoning. If you were provided the opportunity, would you be willing to allow your work to be used for research purposes? Not willing at all, and all the way up to very willing.
Mm.
And then if you are not willing, what are your concerns?
Mm.
If you're somewhat willing, what would convince you? If you're very willing, would you like to receive email updates?
I think you got to point out in that question, the second question, if you selected somewhat willing,
yeah,
what would convince you? They give you three options.
Three options.
One, further engagement with IMDA to learn more about the program and clarify your doubts. Two, monetary compensation. And then three, others.
Others, yeah.
Yeah.
And then three, if you selected very willing, just would you like to receive email updates?
Mm.
Provide your email address. And then the last one, acknowledge that it is a hot button issue. Would like to hear all the thoughts. And
if we proceed with this project. Yeah.
So before I saw the survey, I thought it'd be a lot more detailed.
Yeah, yeah.
This one, I mean, like Singapore Unbound, they published a statement and they kind of shared their thoughts basically on the side of the writer, and they talked about something the survey never say. How it will be used, does not talk about payments at all, only 10 days to respond to the survey, which has now been extended like 18 days.
Yeah.
And the fact that the survey was only sent out to some people.
Closed group.
Closed group, yeah. So it just feels like, okay, there's one thing about tech companies, which already have a bad name now.
Yeah.
But the fact that IMDA and the government is spearheading this, it does feel like, hey, guys, like you can't just assume that people would be wanting to take part because it's for the greater good of humanity. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit annoying. Like the fact that it is kind of, how you say, I'm not say expected. Like, I don't know how much the survey will be taken into account consideration.
Yeah, but it's just survey. What's the big deal? Why?
No, exactly. Like, it's just a survey. That's the thing. I mean, they can hold focus groups and all, but you look at everything else, there's a $70 million committed to this development of AI in Singapore. There's a national AI strategy. It's a fucking long document. But there's no talk of like, okay, how can we compensate the people who are going to be helping? Like, because the norm is now, you just use what's publicly available.
Yeah.
And that's damn gross. Like.
Yeah. But I mean, in that sense, there's an option for monetary compensation.
Yeah.
To sit there.
So can we submit the survey? I mean, we're writers also.
I mean, it's a Google Doc, so... I mean, you can register and write and put it in there. Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, maybe benefit or doubt, maybe they are thinking about monetary compensation in some way.
So when I actually saw this survey, I was like, seems like, I mean, it doesn't seem as outrageous as what the newspaper article seemed to imply it was, right? Mm. Where it's like a foregone conclusion that this was moving forward.
Yeah.
It sounds to me that this survey actually, it's sort of trying to seek the opinions of people as to how they would feel about this, right? So that, I mean, the fact that monetary compensation is even given as an option, to me they recognize that this is a, like they say, hot button issue, and they acknowledge that it is. Where I think it falls short is like what you said, it's not very detailed. Like, if you chose the option of monetary compensation, maybe there should at least be a couple more follow-up questions on what do you think is a fair value to pay to a work person or that.
Yeah.
At least to give the impression that it's in consideration, right?
Yeah.
Whereas right now, it's more like, this is happening, what do you feel about it? And that's mainly what it's asking. But it's not really asking, all right, this is happening, what do you feel about it? And what exact amounts of money would make you feel like it's a fair thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they could easily add this in as a survey question, I feel.
Yeah.
That's a lost opportunity, right?
And I mean, even if you just go to the Sea Lion website, it's a lot of info there. And I'm just looking at this one page, and they talk about why Sea Lion, they talk about a snapshot of data proportions. And one thing that I realized from this page that I didn't know before is that it's going to be open source, which is very different from ChatGPT and OpenAI and even Google and Facebook's Llama.
Yeah.
And that feels like, hey, fuck, like this, it being open source is great. Because our experience with all the algorithm bullshit of YouTube and Facebook is like, even the engineers themselves say we don't know, it's a black box.
Yeah.
But the fact that this is open source, this feels like, that's a step in the right direction. And there's so much info here.
Yeah.
So yeah, the survey just feels like, and maybe it's just the trend of tech companies doing fucked up shit in the past.
Basically, yeah, just pushing through the agendas and then telling us it's good for humanity and why are you stopping it? And then later when shit really hits the fan, like, election interference or kids being exposed to dangerous content and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then they throw up their hands and say, oh, I don't know, the algorithm is just, you know, we're doing our best to try and fix it. You know,
yeah.
You fucking knew, lah. It's fucking obvious. And even Zuckerberg's emails have shown that he took the matter much more lightly than he should have, lah, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
In terms of not stuffing up the people that should be looking after children's content and stuff like that, lah.
Yeah. Right? So and that's where this one, it feels like there's money that's been committed.
Mm.
It feels like this is going to be a new focus area for Singapore. And you know, if Singapore wants to focus on something,
yeah,
they can make it happen, lah, yeah. Right? So it just feels like, okay, there's definitely going to be some commercials involved.
Mm.
This is not setting the right context. And I mean, this is off the back of like what happened in the US. Did you hear about how one San Francisco engineer at Microsoft may have saved the world?
How? What?
Oh, you didn't hear about it? So like a few weeks ago, right, there's this one guy who works at Microsoft and he's a software engineer.
Yeah.
And basically he was kind of like doing his routine checks on the servers that power Microsoft. And he noticed a little, like just one thing that was a bit amiss.
Yeah.
And I'm summarizing it a lot, but basically he found that there was an additional line of code that was injected into the Linux software.
Okay.
That is used to run millions of servers around the world.
Okay.
And he soon found out that that code was injected by this guy who goes by the name of Joe Tan.
Okay.
We don't know whether it's a guy or a group of hackers that was going to give access, like unbridled access, to change the code in Linux for servers around the world.
Yeah.
And it was a big problem because Linux is an open source software. And from what I understand as a layperson, it is maintained by volunteers. And to become like a volunteer, there's a lot of stringent process. Like every decision to be changed needs to be like in full agreement.
Yeah, yeah.
And they run millions of servers, if not all the servers in the world.
Mm.
So the fact that there was this one line of code that this entity, Joe Tan, could just access stuff, right?
Mm.
And it was on the verge of like a potential global cyber attack.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of articles that have been talking about this. And one thing that has been brought to light is that apparently for years, the volunteers or the community of volunteers are pissed off that all these tech companies make trillions of dollars off software that is developed on these servers. And it has restarted the whole debate about like, okay, like we are maintaining this as volunteers, but we are not benefiting anything from it.
Yeah.
So it has restarted that whole conversation. And you look at how that has been happening for years. Linux is not new.
Yeah.
And like with OpenAI and like stuff, it just feels like, is this a starting point of what's going to turn ugly?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so that whole thing is fucking insane. It was a 500 millisecond delay that this one guy detected.
Yeah.
And he saved the world, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's... Again, you know, all that debate about putting too much power in the hands of the tech companies to tell us what's good for us and what's not good for us. And really being disconnected for the last couple of weeks from the world, kind of like, it brought me back to, just being more in charge of even the small things, just how you feel for the day, where you're not fucking fed some bullshit to make you angry, right?
Mm.
And no, you don't open Instagram, go in some wormhole looking at influencers and how great their lives are and all that.
Not reading comments that make you think you don't know how to interview people.
Yeah, exactly. It really helps your mental mood. You really focus on what's on your plate for the day and all that. So all these things really do matter in your day-to-day happiness. In this case, I feel like tech companies for the past decade or plus, they've been taking us on this ride, telling us that tech is going to solve everything in the world, but it's just created another set of problems that now we're unpacking, right?
Yeah.
To solve. I think one of just going back to the survey, one of the interesting things was that they said that, the existing LLMs are from often disproportionate, the data sets are disproportionately influenced from Western industrialized, rich, educated and democratic societies. The acronym is WIRED societies, right? And if you're not from, if you're from non-WIRED societies, you're less likely to be literate, to use the internet and to have the output easily accessed, right?
But that was on the...
In the survey, the rationale. However, what do you think of... this is a new term for me, like WIRED, which Western, industrialized, rich, educated and demographic. Like, I now that's my term. That's, I'm going to use that to describe people for now. He's a wired person.
Oh, where are you from? Oh, you're from a wired country.
Or just people. People. I mean, saying you're Western doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be from the West, lah, but you know, you're Western educated or whatever.
Western,
you know,
industrialist, rich, educated, and democratic society.
That's the new PMET. Lah. Last time it was PMET. Now it's like, you're wired.
You're wired. Oh, yeah. I didn't know.
Interesting.
But I mean, it's almost like history repeating itself, right? Like history, the saying, right? History is only written by the people who won.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, so much of pop culture is shaped by the West.
Yeah.
Now it's slowly changing.
Yeah.
But this almost feels like the next wave that is also going to be shared. So intention-wise, I actually think there's some benefit to developing this model. Because when it was announced last year, a lot of people were saying, why the fuck are we spending $70 million to build this model?
Yeah.
But I actually think that it makes sense for the long term because, yeah, like the LLMs, I mean, sometimes when we've also tried to, I remember using ChatGPT for certain things when we were brainstorming ideas and all.
Yeah.
It really is like Western this Ang Moh person who's like trying to explain Singapore to you. They're like, bro, like, just calm down. Yeah. So it feels like it's a good thing. Like, and then it's almost like, you imagine when Facebook was coming up, Singapore said, you know what, we're going to build a Southeast Asian-focused social media platform.
Yeah.
Quite cool, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now we're just sucking on the teeth of Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah.
Facebook, not so much, but Instagram, which is Facebook, yeah.
Sometimes, using ChatGPT, it's like talking to the Ang Moh who likes to use La.
Yeah.
I'll meet you at Tiong Bahru La. You know,
I think we tried. We tried, right? Like, I wrote, tell me a joke about two podcasters.
Yeah.
An Indian and Chinese person in Singapore. Then the joke was like, the Chinese person has taken the job at the call center of the Indian person.
Yeah.
So you're like, what the fuck is it?
Yeah.
So it's based on all the stereotypes, lah.
Yeah. But so, I mean, it just, you know, looking at all this big issue and all that, like, do you think the writers that whose works are going to be fed through the sea lion should be compensated for that?
I think they should.
They should.
I think they should.
And how much should they be compensated?
Wow. Given that, okay, so realistically, so sea lion, I think they're targeting to have like 5 billion parameters.
Yeah.
I don't know what denotes like a parameter. Is it a word? I don't think so. I mean, I would say definitely, like for a book, just a book.
Yeah, a book. Yeah.
Few K, definitely.
Few K? Book. Okay, okay.
You?
I mean, I don't know how these LLMs are trained, right? I'm guessing that they are like data points that, you know, they will constantly look into your data point and then come out, look in and come out. So I feel like it's something that can be tracked, kind of like YouTube views, right, for example. So, I mean, technology should be able, they need to use technology to find a way to track this, like how the LLMs are using each piece of content and training it. And I think they can do it. It's like, if the machine sort of looks at your book, then that's considered a view or like a Spotify stream or something, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And based on that, you know, they can, if your book is very referenced because, write a book in the style of, Rachel Heng, the Singapore author and all that. And then every time that kind of prompt comes up and then, you know, they use your book to reference it, then it can be tracked, right?
Mm.
And then they pay you accordingly, like some, you know, per click or something.
Actually, that is something that I first, something similar also that this artist in the US is actually trying to do. So there's a very good journal podcast episode, like 20 minutes or something. And there's this artist, Greg Rutt, Kowski or something.
Mm.
So I don't know whether he has an artist name or something, but he was one of the most referenced to artists on like some of the image generative AI content. Like.
Yeah.
And he is leading a charge. I don't know whether there's a lawsuit yet, but basically to do exactly what you just said, like either enforce that all generative AI things cannot use the name of a living artist or like tag it so that they can get monetized, they can earn returns anytime someone mentions them or sometimes whether the process of generation use their work. Sounds like definitely trackable.
Definitely
trackable.
I mean, you look at what happened between YouTube. YouTube is the gold standard. I mean, right now it's the probably not say gold standard, but probably in terms of like allowing people, creating ecosystem where creators can actually track and you know, build a career and know what is working for them, right?
Mm.
There they're miles ahead of like places like Facebook and other platforms because they actually bothered, right, to try and build this ecosystem. Whereas all these other video sharing platforms, I won't name them, but there's a lot of video sharing platforms that claim they want to help creators and help you monetize and all that. It's all, a lot of it was just hogwash. They were just basically pirating the content and like just claiming that they're gonna come up with a monetization strategy down the road. But there was no intention to that, right?
So
I feel it can be done. And it's just whether they value the creators' works and all enough, right?
And I mean, like this Greg guy, apparently, when he checked, his name was quoted 300,000 times. And these people, it's just, I think like what you said, like YouTube, I know TikTok is now putting more funds towards creator funds. But this kind of thing, right, it can totally be tracked. So, I'm going to fill up the survey. And if there are sessions where they're trying to gather feedback, especially for IMDA, given that it's a government arm, you need to guard this.
If anything, be held to a higher standard than the tech companies themselves.
You need to enforce the tech companies.
If Sun Xueling is in parliament calling out Facebook for not doing enough to protect consumers who are getting scammed and all that, I feel then if you're IMDA, then you should be going at a higher level than what these tech companies are saying, right?
Yeah.
Coming in at a higher... from a higher moral ground than these companies are saying, and caring more about the ethics of AI than the tech companies are.
I mean, IMDA got their own fair share of challenges. I know they're changing their CEO like every few years. When we got screwed over by Hook, the response we got was like, it's a commercial decision, can't step in. So that's where it gets annoying. There's always the policymakers, but when the private companies do something, they're like, it's a private company, commercial company. So I mean, hope we see what the survey comes out. At least it's out there in the news that this is going on. So anyone listening, don't just think that these writers who are not part of your industry and all is not worth watching out. Because I'm curious what's going to happen after this.
Definitely.
Cool, man.
Cool. But besides, I mean, this topic of AI and generative AI, it's very high level technical and everything. But there's other kinds of activities in Singapore that also, jobs and all that are being threatened, right? And what is this particular profession that is in a few years' time, is probably you're never not even going to see them anymore. They're going to probably be part of history books that will be that will be part of such a large language learning model that will tell our kids what these things are.
I mean, it's part of the history book of Yalabat also.
It is very recent history
actually. It is somewhat delayed news that there will be no more trishaw rides in Singapore after the last licensed operator ceased tours in the middle of 2023. Is very relevant to us because just 15 episodes ago, we did our 500th episode while on a trishaw.
Yeah.
For the specific reason because we find trishaws very cool and part of our heritage. But this article just came out 9th April and it talked about trishaw uncle, had been running trishaw tours along Queen Street since 2010. So until we started looking for people like trishaw providers to partner with, I never knew that the trishaw operators had stopped. I always thought it was something that still went on. But apparently last October, their contract ended. They tried to look for alternative sites, but then STB came back saying that, all those sites are being used for other reasons. And then they stopped.
I think the trishaw, the uncle that Kent, the uncle that was on the trishaw with us, he told us about the difficulties, that logistically, where do you store all these tricycles, these trishaws or so, because they're big. They're not like bicycles where you can fold them up and everything.
It takes up a lane, it takes up a car lane.
Whole lane, And then to drive, to ride them around Singapore on the roads and all, you kind of need to be designated as almost like a vehicle like that, right? And I think back then when you trishaw uncle was on the road, you would see big batches of them in green, right?
One line,
one line. And then if you are driving or what, you just would scoot past them, right? Knowing that if you follow behind them, it would be very slow and all that.
Mm.
But they were never really like, it was never like a nuisance kind of thing. Like rent, you know how rental bicycles became a nuisance after a while because of the way people were disposing of or like illegally parking their bicycles and all. But this treasure uncle thing was more of like it was a tourist thing, like, right? Mm. It was like you wouldn't do it normally. It's not used for public transport or anything. So why is it like, is it going the way of the dodo and just like disappearing?
I mean, like based on this article, like which is public knowledge that they were informed that they could not continue using the Queen Street space. Mm. They were informed by STB because the contract expired end of May 2023. Queen Street was returned, and I quote, returned to the relevant agencies for their review on the usage of the site.
Mm, mm.
So then, Treasure Uncle, they apparently shortlisted sites in Chinatown, Marina Bay, Gardens by the Bay for and tried to talk to STB about it, but they had all been demarcated for other uses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the company had 100 Treasures, which requires quite a big space.
Yeah.
But it just feels damn sad that it's because of reasons like that that is being scrapped.
And in case you're wondering, why does the location matter so much? Like, why does it have to be at all these prime locations like Marina Bay and Gardens by the Bay and stuff like that?
Mm.
It's because if you are running the treasure company, you're basically getting tourists who want to go to tourist areas, right? So then you would cycle out from there and then, you know, circle around the area and then come back and then park the treasure.
Yeah.
You can't possibly have the treasures parked in Tuas. And in the morning, the uncle is to cycle all the way from Tuas.
Like just a truck pulling 100 Treasures.
Yeah, because they're big vehicles also. Like they're big, yeah. So logistically, they have to be situated close enough to the tourist sites, which are usually prime real estate areas. And if they take out a lot of space, then it's very expensive.
Because you set up Treasure in like Tampines also, they want a bit hard, right? I mean, I grew up in Tampines. I love Tampines. But you don't get tourists going to Tampines.
Exactly, yeah.
To go for Trishaw there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it just feels very sad. Maybe not only 100, have 10. Let's not lose it. Because to me also this is like, oh my god, is this a sign of things to come for like hawker shops, hawker center? Because the reason you read this is because there's no space.
Yeah.
And or there is space, but there are other more suitable occupants or tenants.
But wouldn't you think that Like could this be something that is solved with technology, for example? Like you know, the issue of like logistics that we talked about. What if it's you have trucks that ferry these like trishaws back and forth every morning from Tuas to Marina Bay Sands, right?
They start from 3 a.m. They go and
Then they deploy it at a certain hour. Then at the end of the day, they take it back.
I think then space will be an issue, because where will the space be?
But at least it's in Tuas or something, It's very far out. It's not so expensive to park there and all that. But just logistically, it's a bit of a challenge,
I don't know, man. I think it comes back to the same thing. We are a small country.
Correct. But then because I saw on Reddit some people saying that, but when I tried to sit on this myself, I was quoted like $100. Right on this trishaw. It's so expensive. Why would anybody do it, right?
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you see those like open top buses and all. They're not cheap, you know, to ride on those. Each ticket is like $50, $60. You're sitting on a bus. So how come those can work and then this one can't, as a tourist, as a tourist attraction?
And I take back my statement about Singapore being a small country because that's always the reason.
Yeah.
So, I will refuse to stand by that because I also feel like there has to be some other way to do this. Even if you downsize it, right?
Mm.
Like, is all the space in like, then you can make, let's say you get like a smaller number, but have that space be more than just a storage space for Trishaw uncles, right. I think last time when we were speaking to the guy, it was around Queen Street. It was probably in a car park already, but just feels like to totally stop and discontinue, right, is damn sad, is damn sad. Because it is very charming to be on a trishaw.
Mm.
I mean, another option is when we were on the trishaw, at first I was asking the trishaw uncle, do we need any permit or anything? And he said no.
Yeah.
It is totally legal on the road.
Yeah.
So maybe it's less about having this service die out, but just all these trishaws, like he kept the trishaw that he got from the uncle, from trishaw uncle. So maybe they're all these trishaw uncles just dispersed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like a trishaw uncle for hire.
Like Grab lah.
Grab.
Essentially,
when you have 2 hours to get from point A to point B,
yeah.
Why not a trishaw?
No, and that's interesting. But yeah, because actually, you think about how you get around the city, right? And this is especially after having, travel around Korea and then having to do the off the grid thing of using maps and then bus routes and stuff like that, right? Actually, having more than just one option to get around is actually makes your landscape quite interesting. Examples is like, I took coaches in Korea, like public coaches that you can go to a bus stop, pay, I think, like $3 to $6 or something like that, and take a 45-minute coach to, somewhere outside of Seoul that had a tourist attraction or what. And it's different from a public bus where there's no standing room, it's just a coach only, right?
Mm.
But the price was, very, very close to what a public bus price would be. And I realized in Singapore, actually, there's a lot of methods of commuting that we've basically just made them redundant as options. Like, for example, let's say you are at Clarke Quay and you want to get to Clarke Quay Central or something like that, right? No, is that close? No. Boat Quay, right, for example. I mean, actually, logically, they're both quays. There's a river right there in between. Why is it that you can't hop into a bumboat and then it just brings you over?
That'd be dope, man.
If you're not rushing, if you're not rushing. And it's a nice view and everything. Why not? And then I tried to look it up and you can't because it's all it's entirely a tourist attraction now. So the cost, it becomes prohibitive. It's like $38 or something like that to just for that, even if you wanted to do that short trip. But why can't it be a commuting thing where, a larger boat or something that just brings you from one end of the river to the other for a, public transport-ish kind of feel, right?
Yeah.
And that makes your commuting actually quite interesting. You can plan different ways of getting from place to place.
Yeah.
And then even for tourists also, it's quite an experience, right? Rather than only, if you are joining a tour or going on a duck tour or something, then you get to sit on a boat.
Actually, that's quite cool because, Tanjong Rhu, there's going to be the first round of Tanjong Rhu BTOs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a huge-ass bay there.
Yeah.
That, if you want to get to town, you have to go all around, go on the Nicoll Highway and all. You just have a fucking boat, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that would be so great. Can you imagine you tell people you're coming to work by boat?
Yeah, by boat, yeah.
We see all these videos of, I think there was one video that went viral on TikTok, these Swedish people after work, they get in the river and they float down to the river.
Yeah.
And the whole world is like, oh my God, that's awesome. We have that in Singapore, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you just get on a boat.
Yeah.
Wow, allow it.
And then, in Korea, in Korea, I visited this place called Nami Island. It's a private island just off of Seoul. Yeah, you can take a 7-minute ferry to get there. But if you are feeling adventurous, there's actually a zip line option. You can get on a zip line, get there in a minute and a half, and they literally list it. All these are the two ways you can get to the island.
But really?
Yeah. So it's obviously I took the ferry because I was a kid and everything. I was if I had no kids and I just was adventurous and I wanted to save 5 minutes of my time, I'll just totally do a zip line.
Can you imagine a zip line off across Marina Bay?
You don't get from MBS to over easy, the Merlion there. Yeah, you can walk or you can take the zip line.
You're like, oh shit, I'm late for my meeting. All right, gotta get on the zip line.
Zip line, yeah. That's fucking awesome.
That'd be great. Wow, that'd be great. And we can reduce car usage too.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Right, wow, that'd be great, man.
Yeah, so that's my thing about sometimes we look at this they're charging tourists so much. Of course, nobody wants it. But we kind of got to think of them as maybe they can be another option in our public transport system, right?
Yeah.
If you're not rushing for time and you don't mind something more hot, more scenic or what, and then you support a local industry somewhat, why not, right?
Yeah.
Why not? Why doesn't the LTA or government or something establish a very specific route for these people that is protected as part of a means of transport around the island or something?
Yeah. Because on one hand, you are building this AI model to preserve our culture and language.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're like, hey, sorry, hawker, not hawker, trishaw, just no, cannot.
Yeah, no space, sorry.
No space,
you're gone.
Because, it also feels like at some point it's the same thing going to be about hawkers.
Yeah.
In my blog, there's this one very sweet auntie, uncle couple who've been running a drink store near the cage, Kalang there, for 50 years now.
Yeah.
It was his dad's mother's drink stall. And before all the land was reclaimed, it used to be the shipyard. So all the seamen all will come in and take. So they had their last day 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that whole place is going to be broken down and some shit is going to be built there.
Yeah.
So with all that, shit, is it happening? It is happening. We know it's happening. But when you see things like this where just no more trishaws.
Yeah.
Sad. Yeah, which is all the more reason why maybe we need to do our trishaw tour.
Yeah. To really like bring it back.
Yeah, that's because the trishaws are there.
Yeah, the trishaws are there. Yeah.
Fuck, man, trishaw tour.
Yeah. And yeah, I think what our experience really showed was that you can enjoy and really take in the surroundings much more, right? On a trishaw as opposed to even a car or something. Right?
Yeah.
You're really hearing and smelling the sounds and the smells of every place, right? Yeah, so it's
trishaw.
I feel like 10 years later, we're going to look back at this and like, oh, why didn't we preserve this? We totally could have. It just takes a bit more like gumption on the side of the authorities.
Yeah. So, I mean, the treasure uncle did say if there's an alternative site, of course, we will be willing to restart these operations.
Yeah.
So, maybe it's not the end of the trishaw yet. Imagine if we can play a part in bringing or maintaining the trishaw.
I would. Yeah, I totally would. I feel like, I think our platform is built for something like that.
So see, maybe.
Yeah.
It becomes a thing.
Yeah.
You know, we've had content creators, who was the guy, the guy
Mr.
who...
Mr. Beast, 1,000 Tree.
No, helped save the Tesla Museum in New York.
Tesla Museum?
The artist.
Oh, I forgot his name. Yes.
What's his name?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Matthew Inman.
Matthew Inman.
The oatmeal.
He
helped save a Tesla factory.
Tesla museum.
Tesla museum.
Tesla. Elon Musk saved Tesla factory.
As a result of that comic. But yeah, man. Long live the trishaw.
Yeah, long live the trishaw.
Alright, cool.
Cool. Now is a time for you to jump into what is your one short comment of the past few days, you know, because there have been a lot of interesting comments
on Elon Butler. Yeah, one short comment. I would say just the comments in general, because I know I was making fun of the comments earlier just now about how, you know, they are saying we don't know how to interview people. And a lot of the comments came off the back of the podcast we did with Minister Desmond Lee, which was episode 511. Yeah. There were also comments after certain episodes with other guests, but that one, I think it's more specific. So this one in general, I think people were just kind of dealing with the fact that we did a commission podcast with a minister that maybe wasn't as hard-edged as maybe they have been accustomed to on our show. And I mean I'm just been reflecting a lot on that. And making sure that we maintain the essence of this podcast. So I won't go into specific comments because there's a lot of other stuff that's happening behind that we can't really talk about. It just made me reflect. And I just for people, anyone who left a comment there, I think the feedback has been great. And there's no one who's just writing one-liner things. They all back it up with thoughts. So I would say I appreciate the feedback. And left me a lot to think about.
Yeah.
You?
Same. Actually, yeah, it's a lot of comments about this. I mean, obviously, I think every comment we have to take with a grain of salt because people come with their biases and everything as well. The most important thing was that the episode with Minister Desmond Lee, got a lot of views and a lot of reactions, and positive, negative, whatever. You know, the main things that I think people also expressed surprise at why a minister was coming onto the podcast to talk about such a hot button topic as well. And I'm glad that this has triggered this kind of response because it makes people think about what to expect from their leaders and how they are communicated to these issues. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we do want to get higher and higher profile guests.
Yeah.
So it's also for us to think about, okay, let's say we can even get Putin on the podcast or something.
Bruno Mars,
yeah.
We'll come for 1 minute.
Yeah. You allegedly stayed for 10 minutes at Marquee.
Yeah.
But. So, I mean, we're going to continue to get guests that are worth talking to.
Yeah.
And just keep the feedback coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So for you?
And that was it.
Oh, that was it.
Just reflecting on all the comments.
Cool. And what about your one short thing, man?
My one short thing is, there's this video that I somehow my feed chanced upon recently. It's from this YouTube channel called There I Ruined It. And it's still just about 800,000 subscribers or 800,000 plus subscribers. But they created, the video that I saw was titled I Made a Song Entirely from Artists Singing Yeah. So it literally is that, where he just cut parts where artists, Justin Timberlake, Usher, you know, Adele, Taylor Swift, whatever, singing the word yeah, and then he created a song out of it. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so it's a 47-second video, right? But yeah, so basically I've been reading about this YouTube channel. It's a, you know, someone who just basically, he calls it, There I Ruined It, I Lovingly Destroy Your Favorite Songs. So some of his very popular videos are like, what Red Hot Chili Peppers sounds like to people who don't like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Mm.
And you know how the lyrics of Red Hot Chili Peppers are, sometimes can be just very random. Yeah. So he recreates, or he or she recreates the song in that style, right? That doesn't make sense. And yeah, it's a very interesting way of like, you know, creating music. All these like, using pop culture and reflecting it on itself and creating music from it. Right?
Oh.
Yeah,
so and how you chance upon it?
The feed, man. The algorithm, feed, man. The feed.
Oh,
but it's they're getting quite popular. They're not a very old channel. Only 60 plus videos. But now they're taking, I say they because I believe it's the creator with a band. They're taking it on tour.
Oh.
They're touring around the US now, like performing some of these, like the Yeah song and the what Red Hot Chili Peppers sounds like to people who don't like Red Hot Chili Peppers. They're going around the US and performing like shows. So it's quite interesting. Yeah.
Wow, solid. And you say how many subscribers here?
800 plus thousand. Yeah.
I see. Cool. Okay. So my one short thing is I got a chance to watch a preview of Civil War.
Ah, okay.
What do you know of that movie?
Nothing.
So basically, it's a movie that is set somewhere in the near future where the US has a big civil war.
Okay.
And you get like the Western forces, and then you get like the secessionist states that are trying to separate from the US.
Yeah.
And it's directed by Alex Garland.
Oh, okay.
Who did, you know, like The Beach. His most famous film is Ex Machina.
He wrote The Beach, which was directed by Danny Boyle.
Oh, yeah. He wrote The Beach, correct. He wrote The Beach.
I was a big fan of his his books back then. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And he wrote and directed Ex Machina also, which was a fucking good movie.
Yeah.
So this one, like, it's a very disturbing film.
Okay.
In a way that I think is an important watch.
Yeah.
Like story wise, I don't know, but it's just a show that a kind of show that you don't see often.
Yeah.
Because it follows this group of journalists and it shows you the horrors of war, and it's so realistic. And now the US or the world is so polarized, you can almost imagine it happening.
Mm.
So you watch it, you're like, oh, this is disturbing. And it just makes you think, like, what would a wired country like the US, how would it be and the impact it would have if they went into civil war?
Initially I thought it was like some Marvel
thing, right? Yeah, yeah. I also thought. Yeah, but I remember seeing the trailer. I mean, it stars Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it's a disturbing film. But by the end of it, you just feel like... Oof.
But cinema worthy? Like you gotta...
Yeah, I think cinema worthy. Yeah,
also because big explosions, everything.
And I mean, the way they filmed it was very smart because it's not the most high budget film.
Okay.
But because they do that thing, you know, they follow the journalists very close, so you see up close what it would like be like in a war.
Yeah.
In a civil war in a developed country where they're all speaking English.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a different kind of war movie. Oh,
I see.
Yeah. So I would say that you get your explosions and all. It's done by A24. It does some cool shit.
Okay.
So yeah, by the end I was like, did I enjoy that? I don't know, it's more like a documentary. As opposed to like, oh, great story, no, but it's just you watch it like, oof. A bit uncomfortable, which is the point, I think.
So better than Crazy Rich Asians?
Yes. Yes. Like Crazy Rich Asians, when I watched it, I'm like, what the fuck was that? Like, even if I look at it with a different lens, I still don't like it. If I look at it as a documentary, I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Documentary. Oh,
that's interesting.
I'll check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth, at least you see the trailer, whether it tickles you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's disturbing. It's same way, like, you know, Ex Machina, by the end, you're like, ugh.
Yeah. But it was very enjoyable.
It was great, Yeah. And got some twists.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
Cool.
All right. Cool. And good to have you back, man.
Yeah. Good to be back in regular programming.
Yeah.
We're still having a lot of interesting guests coming up.
Yeah.
But at least, like, you know, we got one in the back with, like, talking about stuff.
Yeah, man.
That's happening.
Yeah, man. So, as always, if you enjoyed this, please follow us on social media. Leave us a review on Apple and Spotify. And if you want to work with us, what should they do, Terrence?
Check out ministryoffunny.com and contact us from there.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.